How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as we are every week by, I almost said Adam and Mike. Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. A great start to today's program. We're going to be talking the TLC pay-per-view. That should turn things around. Great booking for the TLC pay-per-view today, especially if you watched Raw, the Slammy show, which hardly promoted this show at all. Which is really nothing different. I guess we shouldn't be too hard on them. There is a pay-per-view today. There are matches involving tables, ladders, and chairs, and a match involving all three at the same time. What an exciting show. We're going to talk about that here on the program. John Cena is currently not scheduled to be on the show, but don't be surprised if John Cena shows up in some form or fashion. And don't be surprised if some other interesting things happen on the show today. Very often a WWE pay-per-view will come along, and sometimes people think, not much of a show. There's some matches, some stips. You know, they're obviously building up to the Royal Rumble. Probably nothing going to happen on this particular show. But don't be surprised if when the show's over, some stuff has happened. I'll just say that. We're going to preview that show here after the top of the hour break. And then get into all the news from the weekend. Strikeforce was last night. Strikeforce and UFC have signed a new deal, which kicks off in January. This was one of the final shows of the old deal. Mrs. Cyborg, Christine Cyborg, after a year off, returned to the ring to defend her 145-pound title, and defend it she did in 16 seconds. We'll talk about that, plus the main event of the show with Gilbert Melendez. We'll talk his future. Is he going to UFC? Is he staying in Strikeforce? What is going on with Gilbert Melendez, UFC, and Strikeforce? We'll talk all of those stories, plus tribute to the troops. Raw from this past Monday night. More on the Slammies. Tell you about some of those awards and more details on that show. Impact. Notes from the Final Resolution pay-per-view, which previewed this week's Impact. And by previewed, I mean, yes, the big stuff happened on TV, not on the pay-per-view. We'll talk about that. Plus, this weekend is an ROHI pay-per-view. We'll give you details on that. WWE has a new John Cena shirt, which is something else, and a lot more. All of it coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Lots of stuff to get into today. There was a Strikeforce show last night, but quite frankly, not the biggest show of all time in the history of MMA. We're starting with TLC today. In just under 2 hours, WWE presents the TLC pay-per-view, which is coming to you live on pay-per-view, in fact, from Baltimore, Maryland. And live running play-by-play of the show is going to take place on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com moments after this show goes off the air. Dave Meltzer and I up later with a special audio show only for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com talking this pay-per-view. It is a big lineup, I guess, in terms of big lineups nowadays. We've got some championship matches. We've got some stipulations. And unfortunately, as has been the case with WWE for about 2 years, we have some stipulations that, quite frankly, we just don't need. We have some matches which would be better as singles matches, but instead involve, for example, tables or chairs. Although, at least in some of these matches, the stips might help. And at least in one match, the stips are going to make for perhaps a memorable match. So let's get into talking about it. Mike, how are you doing today?
Not too bad. It's kind of like TNA. They got a lot of names, and they got a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff is a good way to put it. For the World Heavyweight Championship, Mark Henry, who did his first clean job since May, in fact, at the Tribute to the Troops show on Tuesday night when John Cena pinned him in a match. Mark Henry has now been pinned twice by John Cena. Actually, he's been pinned once by John Cena, and the other time John Cena hit him with the AA, and then Zack Ryder pinned him, neither of which, I might add, has led to a championship match. So, you've got Big Show facing Mark Henry for the title in a chairs match. Chairs are involved in this match. You can use chairs. They're going to be all around the ringside area. You can whack people in the leg, obviously not in the head with them, although we might see people putting their hands up. But, you know, it's a match that I don't know how good the match would be without the gimmicks. I think I've seen one Big Show Mark Henry match. It was kind of good. I saw another one that was really bad. This one's got some gimmicks. Maybe that'll make it better. I don't know. It is funny in the TLC pay-per-view that it's a chairs match, which means that you can use chairs legally, but shouldn't you be able to use tables as well? If I use a table in a chairs match, am I disqualified? What if I use a chair in a tables match? Am I disqualified? If I use a table in a ladders match, is that a disqualification? I can hit a man with a metal ladder, but I can't hit him with a piece of wood from a table?
Wait. I got a better question for you. You're bringing up all this plunder. What if you just don't break on five?
I guess that would be a disqualification.
Maybe that's written into the contract somewhere where it's only specifically the only thing you can use is a chair. But I think this has come up in past TLCs. In fact, I know it's come up in past TLCs and the lead-ups to TLCs where, yeah, they don't exactly make any of these things quite clear. And then, you know, obviously you've had Mark Henry being, you know, the Pillmanization of his leg by Big Show, and he's been able to play that up. So I guess you have some use for it, but yeah, I mean, it is kind of superfluous.
What do you think is going to happen in this particular chairs match? Is Big Show leaving with the championship, or is Mark Henry retaining yet again?
I would say Mark Henry retains yet again. I don't know what they're going to do with Mark Henry. You can actually make Mark Henry a guy that people will cheer for, since it's not really that difficult to do. And I wouldn't see him losing until something like that happens, or until you have some sort of big deal. I would figure that he's going to hold on to the belt because, again, what does Big Show need it for? And Henry actually has been doing a good job with it. And until it's time to take him off him with the next step on SmackDown, I'm completely fine with him having the belt.
We have a triple threat match for the WWE Championship, CM Punk, The Miz, and Alberto Del Rio. And there had been a plan, which is evidenced by CM Punk going on TV and saying he was not going to be no more hot potato with the WWE title, I think is what he said. Something to that effect. But there was discussion this weekend of, yes, taking the title off CM Punk. Part of it is that his segments on television are doing horribly, in fact, in the ratings. Mostly among, I believe it's children and women. When CM Punk comes on TV, children and women turn out in huge numbers.
They flee.
They flee the television set. And in fact, they put him in the main event slot a couple of weeks back, and the numbers were horrendous. And you know how things go in WWE. There used to be a day where they'd make a plan. The most famous example is the day that Bob Backlund was going to beat Billy Graham for the title. And Billy Graham thought he was getting over super hot as a heel, and he thought it should be delayed. But no, Vince McMahon Sr. had the exact date planned years in advance. And so when the day came, it was that was the way that things were going to take place. There was no changing because a guy got hot or maybe even a guy cooled off. Nope. The course was stayed. No longer. Now a guy gets a couple of bad ratings. Time to take that championship off of him. So may not happen tonight. Cooler heads may prevail, but do not be surprised if CM Punk is not the champion coming out of this show. The obvious idea, or the original idea, was that the final Raw of 2011 is taking place in Chicago. And WWE, their idea was, well, let's make sure that CM Punk goes into Chicago as the champion. Well, now that is being reconsidered. Not exactly sure all of the details. I'm sure the ratings are a major part of it. But you'll recall that there was a plan to bring Alberto Del Rio to Mexico as champion. They were really, I mean, this was like for months and months and months and months and months. We knew that Alberto Del Rio was getting the title because they wanted him to go to Mexico as champion. So he ended up going to Mexico as champion and it meant absolutely nothing, which had nothing to do with Alberto Del Rio. It had to do with the fact of the matter that the TVs that they taped in Mexico weren't built around Alberto Del Rio, so it didn't matter who the champion was going into Mexico. But they may have looked at that and thought, man, You know, maybe he shouldn't have gone into Mexico as champion. Maybe he should have won the championship in Mexico. So they may have decided, okay, well, let's take the title off Punk here, and then we'll say Punk gets his big rematch in Chicago, and we'll try and pop a rating, hoping people will think that he'll win the belt in his hometown. So that could play into it as well. But as I noted, there was talk this weekend of taking the belt off him. So if it happens, that's why. So there you go.
Well, it says a lot about the three guys in this match, because then you go, well, who do you give it to? Do you give it to Alberto Del Rio, who, you know, was the last one to suffer from them losing confidence in someone and not thinking he can carry the ball, even though they jerked him around and stop-started him and delayed his ascension up and then just kind of dropped him when things didn't exactly, you know, the feeling was it wasn't going the way that they wanted to. And the other guy in the match is The Miz, where, you know, all of 2010 was pretty much like that for him, and 2011 hasn't been much better into WrestleMania and after it. So, you know, it's a triple threat of afterthoughts. And a TLC match, which is probably the other afterthought to this.
Well, it would be interesting if the idea, obviously, was for Punk to retain the title when this match was first put together, and if they decided to take the title off of him, do you put it on Miz or Alberto? Because obviously they were not put in that match to win the championship. So there's something for everybody to think about there.
Then well, he's already beaten both of them up. I mean, I think he may have been, was he left laying this past Monday? I can't remember. So that would probably be a good indication he would win this week. But realistically, I mean, why do we need to pay for this show anyway? I mean, he's already proved his dominance over both guys.
We need to buy this show so we can see Triple H and Kevin Nash in a ladder match. A ladder
match!
You know
what? There is something to be said for a good deal of the money I'm going to spend on this being put towards Kevin Nash and seeing exactly how far that sledgehammer is to the ladder as far as him having to climb up it.
I'm thinking if you hang it from the ceiling and it's a long sledgehammer and he's really tall, he may only have to climb up to about the third rung.
That would be good for him.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and we're not joking, people, this is a man who tore his quad on the way into the ring, and that was about 10 years ago.
Not on his way into the ring. He was already in the ring walking. Vince McMahon was on his way to the ring when he tore his quads.
That was the greatest Vince walk ever until the double quad tear.
Actually, people don't remember this, but Vince was running to the ring, and he went to slide in, and he hit both of his quads on the apron, which was the injury. Actually, I got to head to the break. I cut myself off. We'll talk about this when we come back. What a cliffhanger. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Michael Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Running down the TLC pay-per-view here, which goes on the air moments after we go off the air, here on Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, plus sports byline affiliates worldwide. That show, TLC matches, tables matches, ladders matches, chairs matches, and yes, as we were noting, a ladder match with Kevin Nash and Triple H. And before the break, we were discussing the quad injuries of both Vince McMahon and Kevin Nash. Vince McMahon, at the Royal Rumble once year, when there was a screw-up, actually, had to rush down to the ring to save the day. And he ran down to the ring and attempted to run and slide into the ring like the wrestlers do. And he smashed both of his quads on the metal ring apron and tore them both. You're laughing, Mike.
It's just a very natural injury.
It is preposterous. Now, Kevin Nash was the man who tore his quad walking. He was in the
walking.
Ring. He was in the ring in a match, and he was walking from one corner to the other, and he tore his quad. And now this man is going to be in a ladder match tonight. You know, I watched a match with my own two eyes once. I don't know if I've ever told this story on the show, but back when I was a high-profile indie wrestler in small armories around the Northwest, I saw a match once with a man, a fella named The Avalanche, and Big Wood was his name. Big Wood, by the way, is still a good friend of mine. I haven't seen Avalanche in a long time, but he is a fine fella as well. But these guys were having a match very early in their careers, like maybe their first match ever was against each other. And as you can tell by the names Big Wood and Avalanche, these were big mamma jammas here in this match. And they didn't know much about wrestling at the time. They didn't understand anything about pacing. They were very heavy. So they had this match, and I'll never forget, they blew up about a minute in, if they even got that far. And they're both in one corner. And I think it was Avalanche went to whip Big Wood, give him an Irish whip corner to corner, you know, throw him in from one corner to the other. And they were so tired that Big Wood literally walked from one side of the ring to the other to take the turnbuckle. And all the years I'd been watching wrestling, I'd never seen someone take an Irish whip walking. They were so tired. And I saw this, and both of these men will never forget this match. This was like the worst match of all time. But Kevin Nash, in doing that exact same thing, he was not being whipped corner to corner. He just walked into the ring, and he was going to walk to the other corner to be involved, and down he went, torn quad. We all thought he had a heart attack because it was so wacky. But nope, tore his quad, and this was like 10 years ago. So here we have a man who's 10 years older. He's still all jacked up. He's going to the ring in a match where almost invariably he will need to fall off a ladder at least one time. And if he doesn't, I can't wait to see this match. I can't wait to see how they work a ladder match without doing any ladder spots whatsoever, at least off the ladder. I don't want to see either guy fall off a ladder, but, you know, it's 2011. As an audience at these pay-per-views, the audience that goes to these pay-per-views, it's a hardcore audience. And is a hardcore audience going to put up with a ladder match where neither guy gets even two rungs up the ladder and neither guy falls? Is Hunter really going to be taking a bunch of bumps off a ladder? I sure hope not. This match is just going to be a sight to behold. I'm excited for this match.
Does anyone have a GPS on where Sean Waltman is right now? I mean, could anybody else be involved? Yeah, because how long does this...
Maybe even Road Dogg.
Too.
Actually, you know what? Road Dogg did appear on the Slammies to give an award away. So maybe the Road Dogg and X-Pac will do a run-in tonight to take all the bumps.
I'd be fine with that. In fact, everyone should be fine with that. Yeah, that would be good. I'm still trying to get over Big, which, by the way, when Big Wood walked corner to corner, did he at least take the corners better than John Cena?
I'm afraid even John Cena took better corners than Big Wood on this particular day. Because what happened was, I had this on tape once and I accidentally taped over it. I was so mad. Big Wood is walking corner to corner and he walks halfway across the ring. And then he realizes that he needs to hit his back on the other corner. So at about the halfway mark, he begins to turn around. And so he walked the second half of the ring backwards into the buckle. I need to get him on the show one of these days to talk about this match. Astonishing.
Oh, man.
Of course, he's probably going to yell at me and go, actually, it was Avalanche that walked backwards. I don't remember who it was. But I remember they were both involved, and it was great.
Well, and you know, I don't know any of this has to do with the main event other than to say I think Triple H does win. Unless, again, I can see them pushing this thing out until the Royal Rumble, which will make sense as long as there's somebody else to get involved in this. Again, X-Pac, Road Dogg, anybody that, you know, if it's not Triple H tonight who wins, you know, outright, then and they're going to continue this thing on, somebody else has got to be involved.
I'll tell you what this has to do with the main event. We need more characters like Big Wood, because I could make some money with Big Wood. Big Wood, that was his wrestling name, but that's also what all of his buddies call him. And he lives out in the sticks.
The women call him that as well?
Oh, yeah. Every year, I don't even know Big Wood's real name now that I think about it. Every year, so for those of you that always ask...
You don't need a real name with a name like Big Wood.
Well, no, every now and then people ask the question like, what do people call the wrestlers in real life? Do people call him Hunter backstage or do they call him Paul? You know, and the answer is it varies by individual. But Big Wood is Big Wood to all of us. So every year at the same time, Big Wood calls us and says, Roy Rodeo's coming up. You want to go? Because there's a town in Washington called Roy, and they have a rodeo. So we drive out to Roy, or his house, which is near Roy, and Big Wood cooks a big barbecue, a bunch of beef and pork, and we eat all that, and then we drink like crazy, and then his wife throws us all into their truck, and she drives us to the rodeo, and then Big Wood just goes hog wild until the wee hours of the morning. Just a crazy man, a giant man in a cowboy hat. And I always look at him, and it's like, man, you know, this is a real-life, legit character. And meanwhile, I've got to watch these cardboard cutouts on Raw, all reading from scripts and doing the same thing. It's depressing. It's very depressing.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, that whole scene of Piper skit, all of these things over and over again with what they have written for him. I mean, it just drives you nuts. You know, it's just, there are no characters. I mean, when all these promotions were big, yes, you had guys like Backlund and Flair, and you had guys with, like, you know, legitimacy on top and everything like that, but they were also characters, you know, of their own. And Santino, I know Santino gets ripped by a lot of older wrestling fans and things like that, but Santino in a comedy role, in the role that he's in, if he's getting squashed, then you know what? Good. It makes sense. And the problem with WWE is, too, when they do have a character, they end up homogenizing it, like CM Punk, like in a lot of ways Zack Ryder, where they take all the edge off and all the shine off because they want it to be WWE creations and have their touch and their spin on it, that it takes away from the, you know, the organic part of why these guys, people started to, you know, invest and attach themselves to these guys. And it's amazing. I mean, we remember all these. It's not like Dynamite Kid and Davey Boy Smith. We just remember them as they were goofy characters that walked around with Matilda. No, they were the British Bulldogs, and we remember the cool nickname, and we remember their matching outfits and everything, but we also remember that they were, you know, they had the freedom and individuality to have good wrestling matches that weren't all scripted out for them, and they were able to work them, and they were able to express themselves in their interviews without having everything fed to them. They gave them bullet points and then let them go. And again, it's a bigger indictment on their developmental system, which is such a joke, because they go through these guys in like a Miz or a Del Rio or whoever it is, where they give them a little push-up, then they hold them down and then basically hold them accountable for the fact that they can't, you know, hold up to their end of the deal. Well, if they never learned how to work a microphone or take acting classes or wrestle for long enough, then you're going to have these problems.
There's a couple down the card, and you know, there are a couple of, I like Mark Henry's character. He's just a big, scary dude who puts people in his hall of pain. That's great. And Big Show, at least, you know, his personality comes out in everything he does, so that's good.
Those two guys, that's where you're lucky, too, because you always have the big guy that you know can kick an ass. That guy's always going to be able to survive a little bit and at least be a little more Teflon.
Sure. And then you've got Triple H and Kevin Nash, but, I mean, in 2011... I mean, I don't even know what Triple H's character is anymore, you know? He's never around, and then he shows up and yells at some people, and we hear that he owns the place and this and that, but I mean, and then Kevin Nash is even worse. It's like, yeah, there was a time when Kevin Nash, you know, he was Diesel, he was Shawn Michaels' buddy, then he was one of the outsiders and the NWO and everything, and now, I mean, imagine you're a 12-year-old kid, and you turn on TV, and there's just a big, tall guy who's mad. What is Kevin Nash's gimmick? What is Kevin Nash's character nowadays? I don't even know. He's Hunter's buddy. But like the kids, there's so many kids watching the show nowadays. You know, these 18-year-old kids were 8 the last time he was briefly on WWE television. So this whole feud between Nash and Hunter, I mean, it's like, yeah, they showed us one video of Nash's past. But I mean, to your average Raw viewer nowadays, except for your older person like me who still tunes in and watches the show, but, you know, we've seen more than enough Nash for one lifetime. I mean, I just the Nash thing to me is kind of befuddling. And then Ziggler and Ryder. Ryder's at least trying to create a character for himself, but WWE is doing everything they can to make him a dork. And Ziggler, I mean, he's a great wrestler, and I think he's a good interview. The show-off personality to me just seems too forced. The idea that a guy's talking about always stealing the show and having the most entertaining matches, and it's like, hold on a second. What do you mean entertaining matches? Shouldn't any match, you know, if this is real, why is your match any more entertaining than anybody else's? You know, what about your opponent in that entertaining match? Isn't it half their deal that it's entertaining? But I'm going to go through the rest of this list after the break because I got more to say. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, which, by the way, is the place to go if you are a pro wrestling or mixed martial arts fan and you want all of the news, TV reviews, and literally more radio shows than you could ever listen to, I think, in your entire lifetime. We'll talk about that more later on in the show, but I want to get back to my list. I'm looking at the characters here. I want to talk about him a little bit, and then we'll get back to Mike. Wade Barrett. What is the character of Wade Barrett? He's an Englishman and a bare-knuckle fighter, and that is literally all I know about Wade Barrett. Randy Orton. I actually think Randy Orton is great. I think Randy Orton's got a great character because it's always consistent. Whether he's a babyface or a heel, he is a big ass kicker with a chip on his shoulder and a bad attitude. So, you know everything there is to know about Randy Orton. I guess probably part of it is if you follow Randy Orton outside of the business, he's very consistent in his life as well. So, that one I'm okay with because there's at least consistency to the character. Alberto Del Rio, I think the character's fine. Some people will say it harkens too much back to the 80s, but I don't care. I want a character that I understand him and his motives. He is a rich Mexican fella. He dresses the part. He's always got a car. He's got a lackey. He wants to win the championship. And great. You know, nothing about Alberto Del Rio is inconsistent. So I'm fine with that. Miz, I have absolutely no idea what The Miz is supposed to be in WWE. He is a guy who has a faux hawk who gets mad all the time. I guess at one point he was a reality star. They've talked about that, but what is The Miz nowadays? What is The Miz's motivation? Why is The Miz trying to win these championships? Tell me more about The Miz. I don't know anything about him, except he's mad and he's awesome, he says. Same with CM Punk. I don't think there's anything wrong with CM Punk's character, but I think the one thing that drove me nuts, and thank God they only did it once and then they dropped it, was the day he came to the ring and he sat down and he explained to us fans, I'm the guy who says things he's not supposed to say. That, to me, was absolute death to the character. That was the character being given a role by WWE that he was forced to play, and every week he was going to come out and tell us what his role was. Much like Carlito, when his gimmick was, I don't like guys who don't want to be cool. What in God's name does that mean? I still have no idea to this day what that gimmick was all about, and he's gone. Booker T, announcer, but I love the Booker T character. And then Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes has improved 1,000,000,000%. Only thing that still drives me nuts is the voice. The voice screams phony. I don't believe for one second that Cody Rhodes really talks like that. It takes me out of the character. At least he got rid of the bags and the face mask and everything like that. Great worker. I think he's a good promo when he just does promos, but the voice has got to go. So that is my scouting report for the characters in WWE on this particular show. And Mike, anything to add?
Yeah, so how can anybody get into any of these guys? You know, you said Kevin Nash. Look how the whole story started with him anyway, with him sneaking in, laying out CM Punk, the text messages, the, you know, I don't care if I'm fired. Wait, I'm fired? Wait. It was just all the nonsense. And, yeah, it's just been all over the place, and it hasn't been consistent, and people don't care. They slipped on a banana peel right off the bat with that when he was going back and forth with CM Punk. I think it was even the next night. And, you know, people weren't buying it. They were shouting what? It was, you know, the cool, you know, the old NWO cool thing is now two generations removed for wrestling fans. It's gone. You know, Henry and Big Show, like you said, fine. Yeah, Wade Barrett. Barrett's Brigade. Wade Barrett, just call him an ass-kicking guy. Just push him like that instead of having the Barrett's Brigade thing. You know, just give him what Randy Orton has now. Randy Orton's got a perfect character in that, yeah, he's consistent all the time. He's got one flaw. He gets knocked out easy. Everybody knows that. He'll go glassy in a match, and they always, you know, kind of point that out. And it's, you know, it's, they have something there. But, yeah, Dolph Ziggler, who's done a great job with his whole, you know, hashtag heel persona, and he's built that up, and now they're making him a caricature, you know, of himself by doing the handstands and having him amp himself up that way. It's just, I don't know, Cody Rhodes is the same way, too, where, you know, he's succeeding in spite of what they're doing. They gave him the comic book-type character thing, which was good, and, you know, yeah, he can shake the voice now. I think it's okay.
Anyway, on this card, we've got the Dolph Ziggler versus Zack Ryder match. It is for the U.S. title, and I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do here. If it were any other era in wrestling, I'd go, okay, Zack Ryder's going to win the title. It's about time. But it's 2011, and I look at the booking, and they kind of give Ryder a push. You know, he teams with John Cena. He gets some wins. But then you see him get squashed in a minute by Alberto Del Rio the next week, and I don't know. I just don't know how much they're going to invest in him. And it really depends on what they're going to do with Ziggler as well. You know, if Ziggler is going to be in the championship hunt for the main title here coming up in January, then yeah, put the belt on Ryder. But I'm not sure what they're going to do with either guy. And there's that part of me that I've seen it a million times. Everybody buys the show. It's time for Zack Ryder to win the championship. Everybody expects it to happen. And then all of a sudden, you see Dolph Ziggler hit the zigzag, and the referee counts three, and you're like, what? And the match is over. I have it in my head that we're going to see something like that. And again, I'm not saying this is what I think they should do. I think that Zack Ryder should win the title tonight. But I've watched WWE for a long time, and do not put it past them to have Dolph Ziggler beat Zack Ryder in the middle of the ring, and that's the end of this feud.
You know, in a more cosmic wrestling world, Dolph Ziggler holds on to this title because, well, what has Zack Ryder really done to deserve a chance at it besides lose on TV all the time, or at least in big matches when people see him? I think Ryder's going to win because I think they are going to do something with Ziggler because I can see, you know, Ziggler in the mix for one of the two titles, you know, especially he and Punk, you know, at Royal Rumble or something like that. So they need somebody else in that mix anyway. And again, I've always been a big fan of Dolph Ziggler, so I'm completely fine with him losing to Ryder here. Because again, if he doesn't lose the Ryder here, then what's the point? Then just put Ryder on Superstars, you know, exclusively all the time, or on SmackDown exclusively all the time, and get him out of the way.
We've got Randy Orton and Wade Barrett in a tables match. And the stipulations, first thing I always think when I hear tables match is, oh, babyface loses, but doesn't have to get pinned. So I think that it is inevitable, at least as inevitable as things are in WWE, which is actually not inevitable at all. But I think it's likely that Randy Orton is winning the Royal Rumble this year. It's in St. Louis. He's from St. Louis. He's a star. He's been doing a lot of jobs of late, which is usually what they do in preparation for a guy getting a win. Don't even ask. But I would think that if that is the case, there is a possibility that Wade Barrett beats him in the table match here. Randy Orton falls off a top rope as he's going for an RKO and goes through a table. And based on the rules of the match, Wade Barrett's the winner. And then they do a long TV match on SmackDown that Randy Orton wins. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. And then Randy Orton goes on to win the Royal Rumble. So that's my prediction here, that Wade Barrett wins.
I guess I could go with that. I'll actually say Randy Orton wins, and then Randy Orton moves on to something else. I don't know exactly what that would be, but I'll go that direction. I'll say Orton wins tonight.
All right. We didn't talk, by the way, about your prediction for the Nash-Triple H match.
Oh, Triple H.
That's a good
again,
answer.
Unless something bizarre happens where, again, they're going to continue this thing out where there's going to be a bunch of people involved. And in that case, I can see that Nash winning, you know, the match and Triple H is laid out or something like that. But hopefully they just put this whole thing to bed and then Triple H just wins this thing outright and it goes away.
We have Cody Rhodes, Booker T for the Intercontinental title. Is there any chance Booker T is winning this belt?
There's a chance, but I don't think he will.
He actually did a funny interview the other day, which I thought was ironic leading up to this match, where he essentially talked about how, I'm not really any good at commentary. I don't really want to wrestle. I'm enjoying this, but my days are numbered. It's like, wow, what a way to promote the show there, buddy.
That's a crusty veteran who just doesn't care, going, you know what, that he's all but saying, you know what, I like getting paid. I like having the camera on me. I like getting that little bit of a rush and everything, but I don't need any of this nonsense.
I actually, Booker T has had some horrible days on commentary. But
that's putting it mildly.
But I'll say it again, you know, I like Booker T on commentary because, to me, it's okay to have a guy who's there and he's just funny and exuberant, you know? He's excited. He says funny things. He jumps up and down. He makes everybody laugh. I am totally okay with having a guy like that. It's not Booker T's fault that he does commentary with a heel play-by-play guy who ruins every show. You know what I mean? Like, if you had a good play-by-play and you had a good color guy, and Josh Matthews is pretty good. I mean, he's no Jim Ross or Jerry Lawler or anything, but he's solid. If you had a great play-by-play guy and a great color guy, nobody would have any problem with Booker T because he would be the comedy foil. He would be the comedy relief in that announce booth. But because Michael Cole, as a heel play-by-play guy, sucks so bad, that's why people look at Booker T and they go, oh my God, he's horrible and I hate Booker T. This is not Booker T's fault.
See, I don't think anybody says that because Booker T, it's like, I think everyone's happy Booker T's there because everyone's happy Booker T's making money because everybody likes Booker T. But yeah, the commentary, but he's really bad. And he would be in, again, it's production and direction and, you know, again, having two guys that would actually know if they were, you know, who were playing their roles properly. If he was there, it would dull the blow, but he's really not that good.
I have seen better.
That's, and there have been worse. I mean, there have. And again, I like Booker T, but yeah, you're right. It's everything is really magnified by, again, Michael Cole should have been a manager after WrestleMania, or at least gone back to being, and he was for like a second, gone back to being just playing it straight. But him being back involved with Jim Ross and Daniel Bryan and Booker T, it's just, it's awful. It's awful.
So that is the TLC pay-per-view, everybody. It is coming up immediately after this show goes off the air. As noted, Dave Meltzer live running play-by-play on the front page of the website. For those of you that don't get the show, you can check it out there. And Dave and I will be back later on tonight with a brand new radio show running down all of the results of that pay-per-view. So if you didn't see it, well, this is your chance to get the scoop. Now, speaking of scoops, last night was Strikeforce, which Dave also did live running play-by-play for. It was the return to the ring of Mrs. Cyborg after 18 months. And it was her chance to get in there, defend that title. And I guess the big question was, after 18 months off, was there going to be ring rust? Was she going to just get in there and absolutely obliterate somebody? What was going to be the story of the return of Mrs. Cyborg? And the story ended up being that, in fact, no ring rust whatsoever. She got in there with Hiroko Yamanaka, in fact, who was about 10 feet tall and absolutely completely destroyed her in 16 seconds. I shouldn't say absolutely completely, because there were people that argued that perhaps the stoppage was premature, but it was not looking good for young Yamanaka, who actually is in her early 30s, believe it or not. Mike, what were your thoughts on the stoppage very quickly before we go to the break? Was it premature or was it perfect?
I really think it was perfect. Now, it could have went on a little bit longer, but finding out she was actually S&M dominatrix, I wonder if she called out the safety word.
We're going to be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are about to head to our hourly break, but after the break, another full hour of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts here at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, before the break, we were talking about the return to Chris Cyborg. Knocked out Hiroko Yamanaka in 16 seconds. You thought it was a fair stoppage. And a lot of talk on the show about perhaps an upcoming fight with Ronda Rousey somewhere down the road. Probably not going to be anytime soon. But it is MMA. Anything can happen. Usually we ask Todd Martin for his odds, Todd's odds, but we're going to ask Semp's odds here. What are the odds that Ronda Rousey and Chris Cyborg go undefeated for a year and a half before the time comes when they need to finally face off in a battle?
I don't even know if you have to push out a year and a half, even just a year. Yeah, I mean, it's possible. The Kaufman-Tate winner is going to get Ronda Rousey, and I don't think Rousey's going to fight before that. I wouldn't. So they would face off, and then who's going to really face Cyborg? And, again, there's not that many women at 145 who are going to pose a threat to her. And even if she does get another fight in the meantime, I would figure she's going to be favored. So I think there's a really good chance it happens. I don't think it takes that long for it to happen. But even if it does, I can see it happening. Again, and we're all in awe of Ronda Rousey right now, and I'm, you know, one of those people who is. But, you know, again, she's not gone longer than a minute. She hasn't had to. And as great as all of that is, can she take a punch? There's all those things that go into it where we don't know exactly what we have with her outside of the fact that she right now is awesome.
There is a chance they may go to Rousey Tate first. It's not confirmed. Scott Coker's down with the idea. So,
it makes no sense? No.
It makes
because
plenty of sense.
Because if Kaufman beats Tate, you have a reason for her to keep her in the mix. Tate's going to be in the mix, win or lose. The rest of the women are, Cyborg and Rousey are, you know, so I would have that fight first just in case there is an upset. Then you got something to go off of.
Let's talk about this after the break. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Joined as we are every week by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. We have so much stuff to talk about today. We spent the first hour talking the WWE TLC pay-per-view, which does, in fact, go on the air moments after we go off the air here on the show. So you can go right from this program to that program if you decide to do so. And if not, you can head to WrestlingObserver.com, live running play-by-play of the show with Dave Meltzer. Dave and I will be up later on this evening, exclusively for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com, talking all of the news from TLC in detail, plus the rest of the news from the weekend, your questions, and more. That's coming up later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, before the break, we were talking about the potential of a Ronda Rousey-Misha Tate fight coming up immediately. You don't like the idea. And you were briefly explaining why. Now you've got an extra minute to do so.
It's just simply because, you know, obviously, you know, Tate with her looks and you know, she is a good fighter. Rousey, obviously, with her looks and the potential of her and then the whole, you know, her natural gimmick she's got going around her right now. And Cyborg being Cyborg, obviously, if Marlos Conan was there, it'd be, you know, even better, but she's not. But, you know, Kaufman's the one who's the odd person out, and why not do Kaufman-Tate? Because just in case Kaufman wins, you can still do Tate-Cyborg. You know, she's still going to be a marketable person, win or lose. So, you know, really, if Kaufman were to win that's good. Why take that out and you immediately rush to get Rousey and Tate? Why? Is anyone really going to be beating down the door saying Rousey needs to stay active? I mean, if she needs to, she can take fights, and I have confidence in her that, you know, she's going to win those fights. But with that said, I mean, why rush it?
I would go with Rousey-Tate. I think it's a money fight right now. I wouldn't risk Tate losing to Kaufman. Go with Rousey-Tate. Let him talk it up. Let the people get into it. Do the fight in 4 months. And then after that, the winner can face Kaufman. If it's Rousey, she faces Kaufman. And that can be later on in the year. And by the time she's beaten both of them, she'll be good to go for Cyborg, hopefully. And then, of course, Cyborg has to destroy another tomato can as well in the meantime, but that should be easy. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back talking more about Strikeforce last night. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and, of course, Sports Byline affiliates worldwide, including a new affiliate in the home of Jerry the King Lawler in Memphis, Tennessee. Big thank you to those guys. And, Mike, the Strikeforce show last night, We talked about the return of Chris Cyborg. The main event of the show was what some people thought was the final fight in Strikeforce of Gilbert Melendez against Jorge Masvidal. As it turns out, UFC and Strikeforce have signed a brand new agreement for new shows in 2012. And the story is that it is no longer the idea of a feeder system for UFC out the window. It's going to be its own self-sustaining company. And looks like Gilbert Melendez is staying in Strikeforce, despite the fact that at the end of the fight last night, he challenged the UFC 155-pound champion to come and play. I don't think that's happening. But thoughts on the main event last night and the future of Gilbert Melendez?
You know, I don't want to say this because he was very upset that people thought he could finish the fight sooner last night or that he took the wrong tack during it. But, you know, calling out the guys in the UFC at 155, obviously if I were him, I'd do that too. Even though he looks, you know, he's been in Strikeforce for a long time and he's, you know, completely identified with Strikeforce. You know, the big money and the big fights are in the UFC. But, you know, I don't think there was anyone that has been a pure UFC fan that hadn't seen Strikeforce. I don't know if they would have been all overly impressed with Melendez's performance last night. Masvidal, it was amazing. Masvidal seemed to be happy with the fact that he was throwing punches and busting up Melendez's face. And Melendez seemed happy to stand in there and be, you know, able to trade with a guy that, you know, has fought at 170 pounds and to stay in there with it. And he did go five rounds. It was a unanimous decision and an easy one for Melendez, but it wasn't his best show to date, I can say that.
I was just bored by the fight by round four. Just bored by it. Same thing over and over again. And it's fine for Melendez. I mean, you know, you're winning the fight, so just keep doing the same thing in every round, which is exactly what he did. But, you know, the Masvidal situation, it was like, okay, you're losing the fight, so why are you doing the exact same thing every round? And I don't have an answer to the question, but he just did, and the fight continued, and he continued to lose every round, and I got bored, and then he lost the fight, and it was like, well, wow, that was a heck of a title defense, or a heck of a title shot you just had right there. So, I don't know, I was bored by it.
You know, you can still have a Strikeforce and have women's titles and things like that, but not have, like, Strikeforce-recognized titles. You can just have, like, a show of great fights with maybe women's titles or, I don't know, say you debut the 125-pound title, do it there or something like that. I don't know, but I know they want to keep the identity separate, but I don't think you need to have champions in both. And I know they don't want to look like a feeder system either. Well, I mean, Melendez just being on there without a belt, if he's going to be your signature guy, fine. Why does he necessarily need to have a belt when he's always going to be compared to those UFC guys, and he's a talent that, unlike, you know, a lot of the Japanese guys and things like that at this point, like Aoki being a good example of that, where he came over, and Gomi's run in the UFC, where he came over and they were destroyed right off the bat. It's not like that's going to happen with Melendez in the UFC, so he's a competitive guy legitimately, and he's one of the few guys who's not there who can lay a legitimate claim to saying he's one of the best in the world, if not the best in the world at his weight. So why not just let them have title fights in the UFC and then just have names appear on Strikeforce shows? To keep the identities that separate is kind of ridiculous.
So I would presume that that means you're not a fan of BJ Penn's idea of having regional UFC titles?
You know, is that concept 10 years from now, you know, Dana White says he wants to have a show every day somewhere in the world that's sanctioned under the UFC banner. And I'll blame him for that. You have Ultimate Fighter shows in Brazil. You'll have them in Thailand. You'll have them in the UK purely, in Australia purely, and you know, at that point, you can almost start doing it, but it becomes bastardized. It can become bastardized. But if you do something like that, K1 did it, and they're legitimate, it's okay, because then because again, you can't watch everything at all times. Guys can't travel from, you know, say they're in New Zealand or whatever. You know, they're not going to be able to always travel to the States and stuff like that for major shows. So that's not a bad idea as far as being able to, you know, years from now, as far as building something up where there are regional things and you go into the UFC or you're, you know, there's a minor league system for it almost or something like that. Yeah, that makes sense. As far as doing it now with, like, major companies, no, I don't think that makes sense at all.
The UFC Hawaiian champion.
Which, for a kid coming up 10 years from now, will be good. And he'll get some shine, and they'll go, you know, and then maybe they'll bring him over for a fight because somebody gets hurt, and they go, hey, you know, this kid's on a 6-fight winning streak. He's been, you know, mentored by BJ Penn in Hawaii, and, you know, we're going to give him a shot because somebody's hurt. So, yeah, it can make sense that way.
Now, this week, UFC officials, including Dana White, were down in Brazil, and they were setting up UFC Brazil, Tough Brazil, Ultimate Fighter Brazil. And that's going to be coming up in 2012, and shot entirely in Portuguese. Going to be airing on Globo, a television channel in Brazil. Actually, a big network channel. It's going to get a lot of eyeballs on it. And at this point, no outlet here in the U.S., at least on television. I think they're going to do all they can to try and get it on Fuel with subtitles. It wouldn't be the first time they needed subtitles on Ultimate Fighter. But that is in discussions. And I am pretty sure that if all else fails, the show is going to air on UFC.com. For those of you that just cannot get enough UFC and want to follow Ultimate Fighter Brazil, what are your thoughts on the idea of a show attempting to create stars in another region of the world that is really unavailable for your average person to watch on television in a foreign language?
So? It doesn't. Those are obsessive UFC fans. This is a sport you want to grow worldwide. I mean, it makes sense for the UFC to get its tentacles in there. If anyone's training in MMA or anything has anything to do with MMA across the world, why, you know, it affects the most on them. Why would they not want their tentacles out there in it? I mean, again, because you can't see it, it's not that it's any big deal. I mean, the Ultimate Fighter here, as far as watching that, I mean, it's not necessarily must-see TV every season or every episode or anything like that. So you can't blame the UFC for doing this. You can't blame them for putting on a TV show on a major network. I mean, as far as the business of it goes, you can't fault it at all. And as far as the fan that would complain about not being able to see it, I would check priorities there. I mean, yeah, if you have time, it would probably be okay to watch, but good Lord, I mean, how much do you really need to see?
Me personally or your average fan?
Well, I mean, you don't need any more to see, but your average fan, I mean, even, it's just, it's going to be this way, and it's going to happen here. There'll be multiple, maybe they go into 4 seasons, it takes off so well on Fuel, and Fuel gets carriage, and maybe they have on FX, it's so popular they actually have 4, like, I don't know, every quarter they do an Ultimate Fighter show. I mean, it's growing and it's expanding out, and they have no intentions on stopping that. So for whether it's right or wrong, there's going to be shows and people that you miss, and that's not that big of a deal.
Are you a hunter?
Not a hunter.
Hmm. This actually does have something to do with UFC. The Brock Lesnar arrest over some hunting violations. Actually, the violations occurred last year. So it's kind of old news, but he's going to have to answer to some of these violations. And one of them was possession of a controlled animal. I don't even know what that means.
Well, you got an animal that you, well, I think it can mean one of two things.
So like if I had a chipmunk here, that could potentially be possession of a controlled animal?
Well, I think it's one of those things where maybe if you shoot one deer too many, you know, and you've hit your limit and you have the deer with you, or you have 3 there instead of 2, that they may say that. Or maybe it's an animal that's out of season as far as hunting, like, you know, he was shooting quail or something like that when he shouldn't have, and outside the season, maybe something like that.
What a thing to get arrested for.
I guess that's better
than your average every 2-week DUI of a pro wrestling star. We're going to, actually, let's head to a break. Talk about this more when we get back. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here talking all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, including possession of a controlled animal by Brock Lesnar. Still trying to figure out what that is all about. actually didn't get to see what the controlled animal was that Brock Lesnar was in possession of. I need more information. Maybe it was a Bigfoot.
A Bigfoot?
Yeah.
Antonio Silva.
He may have been. I don't know.
I'm holding him hostage.
What great radio this is, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can listen to this every Sunday. Talk of Brock Lesnar and Bigfoot. But back to the news. Let's get back into some of the news here. The tribute to the troops this past Tuesday night, you didn't get a chance to see, but I did. And tribute to the troops is never like a, I mean, it's always like a positive sort of show. They got some good video packages. They talked to the troops. But it was a weird show in the sense that it used to be, first off, they used to go overseas, like Afghanistan. And they'd set up the ring in the middle of the desert, and there'd be all the troops there, and they're all having a great time. And the women are there dressed as elves, and troops get the chance to kiss an elf here on during the Christmas season. But this year it was, it's in America, in an arena. And granted, it was all friends and family of the military, which was great. But still, it was just like another SmackDown event, really. And didn't have the same feel as most years. And I'm not saying it was bad or anything like that, or WWE shouldn't have done it. But, you know, it's just different now. It's different. But still, it was a decent show. There was some good stuff on there. But it just felt too much like every other WWE show that I watch. And that's kind of too bad, because they really had something there for a few years. A really special feel-good show for many years. And again, I'm not saying this one wasn't, but the fact that it was inside a building just like any other show here in America, it just was missing that special something.
Well, I think that's because the other shows have been so, I mean, there's been such a malaise over their regular TV shows that, you know, and them doing wackiness and goofy things, and when they do them on this show, it doesn't mean as much. And obviously the aesthetics, too, from how it sounded of, you know, them being in the States this year at an Army base as opposed to traveling to Iraq and Afghanistan, which they've done, and it's over the last few years. And, you know, aesthetically, I heard it was, you know, it took away from it a little bit, but, yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. I still want to watch it, but at least it is one of the better things they do year in and year out, though, is doing that show.
Goes back, actually, to my field trip analogy that I made a while back. You know, when you're a little kid, and maybe it's not like this anymore. I've actually had some people say that it's not like this anymore. I don't know. Maybe they live somewhere like in Roy. But when I was a little kid, would go to school. You go to school every day, and you sit in your desk, and you do your work. Not that there's anything wrong with school for all you youngsters listening. I'm just telling you facts. You do all this stuff over and over again, and then all of a sudden there's a day that you get to take the field trip, and you get to go to the local Safeway or something like that, and they take you in the back and show you some dude stocking cans, and they're showing you this or that, and, you know, field trip was always fun because you got to get out of the same monotony. You got to get out of class. You got to go somewhere. You got to be out in the real world and see how things work. Field trips were great. Loved going on field trips. And Tribute to the Troops used to always kind of be like a wrestling field trip. You watch the show every Monday night. And I remember somebody in UFC had told Dave Meltzer, they go, you know, you're the only person that cares what city the next UFC event is in. They go, those of us here that work, it's just another show in another city, you know? Unless it's like you're running the show in Toronto in front of 5,000 people. That's a little different. But, you know, you're in a building, it seats 15,000, it's maybe almost full, and there's a bunch of fights. You know, to the people that work in UFC, I mean, it doesn't matter what city it's in. It's just, this is the next city we're going to. And it's kind of like that with WWE. I mean, as a fan, you know, the TLC show's in Baltimore, Maryland, but your average fan, they don't know where it's at. It could be in Portland, Maine. It could be in Boise, Idaho. It doesn't matter. The buildings all look the same. You're doing the same guys, doing the same matches over and over again. So it's fun every now and then to have something different, like the Club La Vella. I never forget those. The Nitro, where they went to Club La Vella, and the ring is floating in a pool. And it's just totally different. It's like you're on a field trip. It's like you're on a wrestling field trip. And it was like that with Tribute to the Troops. You're outside. The ring is set up in the middle of the desert. Everybody's going nuts. Totally different atmosphere. The sound travels differently. They're essentially doing short house show matches. The babyface almost always wins. There's no angles. It's just a feel-good show that doesn't mean anything. You know, it used to always be the story was nothing counts on this show. Like the first time the master lock was ever broken, I'll never forget this, was a troop did it, or a soldier. I was alerted, actually, that a single soldier is not a troop, unless he's really tough. But a soldier broke the master lock for the first time. And it was just always, kind of like a fun little thing. And taking it out of that atmosphere and putting it in the building really took the field trip aspect out of Tribute to the Troops. And again, I'm not critical of WWE. I think the show was fun. I'm glad they do it every year. It's a great thing that they do. But just personally as a fan, I liked it a lot more. I mean, I'm not saying you need to go back to a war zone or anything like that and put people's lives in danger or anything. But, you know, there are different ways to do it to make it different. And I wish they would have done that. But there's always next year.
And they'll do it next year. It's like something they're going to do year after year. And again, now that, you know, just yesterday, said all the troops are out of Iraq now, and you know, if again they look like they're keeping it up, even if there's nothing going on overseas, or if they don't take it overseas, at least they'll take it to a base. Because it was kind of one of those things, I remember Clash of the Champions 2 would be in Fort Bragg, or there was one in Tennessee too that they would go to, and it was always kind of a rowdy crowd. You know, it wasn't a huge building or anything like that, but it was always kind of an up and rowdy crowd anyway, so it helps the atmosphere out a lot.
Did you get a chance, actually, before we get into that, let's talk about the Slammy, since we're on the subject of Raw. Slammy Awards this week. I thought there was one great match on the show. There was one all right match. And there was a lot of awards. We had, I think this may be a record, we had 1 minute of wrestling in the first hour and 20 minutes of the show. Think about that, everybody. An hour and 20 minutes of a wrestling show with 1 minute of wrestling. And we said it before, it's not the amount of wrestling on a show that matters. It's whether the segments are good. You know, if you've only got 1 minute of wrestling in a 2 hour show, if the other, however many minutes that is with commercials, 83 minutes, if the other 83 minutes are awesome, non-wrestling segments, great! But I was not blown away by the first hour and 20 minutes of this show that was not pro wrestling.
Interesting math there, I believe, but in any event.
Well, 42 minutes an hour, so 2 hours would be 84, and if 1 minute's wrestling, that's 83.
But, and how long of a period are we talking about here?
A two-hour show.
Okay.
There's 42 minutes of content in a show, because the rest of it's commercial time. So you got 42 minutes of wrestling for 2 hours is 84 minutes, and you take a minute out for wrestling, it's 83 minutes. That's pretty good by myself, in fact.
I would have to ask Adam to give me back the Adam and Mike Big Audio abacus to figure that out. But, yeah, I mean, and again, we talked about this with TNA. When they would do that, it's just like a bunch of talking, and it's not even any good. And that's what this was. It was a bunch of nonsense that wasn't any good. And it was, and I know USA wants these three-hour shows, but it was so bad so early. Starting right off with Jim Ross and the oh my, or did I just see that moment or whatever it was, and it just went, and it was amazing how he could go downhill from there, but damned if it didn't go downhill from there.
You know, it's funny when you say USA wants these three-hour Raws. They do, but I don't know how much longer they're going to want them, because NCIS has been doing some great numbers as a lead-in to Raw.
It's ridiculous. Like, it makes no sense.
Like, in fact, a couple of weeks ago, NCIS... The 8 o'clock episode of NCIS did a better rating than the first hour of Raw. Now, if you look at the 3 hour Raw, what was the lowest rated hour? It was that 8 to 9 hour, because people always forget it's 3 hours and they always tune in late. You know, people hear 3 hour Raw, and I think there's always going to be 20% of them that think, oh, it starts at the same time and goes an extra hour longer. No, it starts an hour earlier. But regardless, first hour of Raw in a three-hour show is always the lowest-rated episode. So if NCIS is doing better than your average first hour of Raw, then it actually hurts USA Network to run a three-hour Raw, because they're getting rid of a highly-rated NCIS to put in a lower-rated hour of Raw at 8 o'clock.
a hell of a place they're in right now.
Yeah.
I don't know why that is. I mean, again, yeah. They're getting NCIS episodes that are not, it's not like they are brand new episodes or anything like that, or just coming off of CBS and going right on to there. They're a couple years old. Even for whatever is causing this increase in viewership there, it's kind of scary. And again, all those kid shows, that was one thing when they started to take over Raw. But now that Raw, I mean, the eroding fan base, and again, they're not making loyal viewers where, this is going to start getting worse and worse and worse. And we talked about how bad it was when they actually came back to USA and they had to take far, far less than they got from Spike or the Nashville Network, whatever they were called at that time. And they ended up coming back to the USA Network. They took a hit there. Imagine what the next go-around is going to be. They have no stroke whatsoever.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting story to follow, as is the story of the WWE Network. We talked about that here on the show. It's a wait and see. I know that people in WWE are terrified of this upcoming network. We are down to the last few months here, and they've still, think about this, they still have like 150 people left to hire. It is supposed to launch on April 1st. I mean, this is literally an impossibility that they're going to try to make possible. You know, they'd be better off trying to create a perpetual motion machine, I think, than get this show started on April 1st, this network. But they're going to try, and we'll see how it goes. We're going to be back in just a moment talking more pro wrestling and mixed martial arts news. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 20 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday. Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. And of course, WrestlingObserver.com is a place to go for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Daily radio shows as well. In fact, here's something you can do. When you're done listening to this show, and of course when you're done with the live play-by-play of the TLC pay-per-view, which Dave Meltzer is going to be doing immediately after the show goes off the air at WrestlingObserver.com, head over to WrestlingObserver.com and scroll down the right-hand side of the page. There is a listing of our latest, absolutely, positively, no-strings-attached free radio shows for you to download and listen to. Got a whole bunch of them up there, actually. Usually we only have three, but I believe right now, and I shall check, we have got five free radio shows up on the site. And by free, I mean you go up there, you click the link, and you download the show. There are no pop-ups. There is no spyware. There is no page where you've got to punch the monkey or whatever that thing was. You just click the link, you download the show. Put it on your iPod, iPad, Android, whatever your listening device might be, or listen to it just on the internet on your web page here. And if you like what you hear, that is, I'm trying to think of the math. I'm not very good at math, but whatever 5 out of 5,000 is, because that's how many shows we have available on the website. If you sign up right now, it's only $10.99 a month. You can sign up for 1 month, and if you don't like it, never sign up again. But if you sign up, you have access to over 5,000 archived radio shows. Every radio show, think about this, 15 to 20 radio shows a week. Multiply that by 6 years. So many shows we have in the archives. Thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio. Thousands of hours of audio. Some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling have been interviewed on this show. Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Bruno Sammartino. A couple of weeks back, we had Bobby Lashley talking his participation in one half of one of the biggest WrestleMania main events of all time, and whether he ever considered shooting on Umaga so that, or actually, I'm sorry, lying down for Umaga so that Donald Trump would have to have his head shaved. Asked him about that. And in fact, he noted he joked about that with Donald Trump. So anyway, all those are up in the archives right now. Check them out. Check out those free shows, if nothing else. Listen to those free shows. And if you like what you hear, including that Observer Radio with Rowdy Ronda Rousey, if you like what you hear, consider signing up. Believe me, You will not regret this. So check it out. All next week, we're going to be joined by a guest from Ring of Honor as the ROH iPay-Per-View Final Battle is coming up next weekend. So we're going to talk to various ROH superstars next week on the show about ROH and the independent wrestling scene and Sinclair Broadcasting and the television show and Final Battle and everything else. So that's coming up next week only for subscribers. Check it out. And Mike, are you looking forward to Final Battle?
Actually, I am. It's the one thing about all those iPay-Per-Views, I haven't gotten one where I've been disappointed yet. I mean, they've all been good. I haven't had a problem with, you know, the early ones with buffering and things like that. But outside of little things here and there, I mean, I've never had a bad connection or anything like that. So they've all been very good. And it's not that I spend the money supporting WWE and UFC and spending the money to watch their shows. I mean, ROH, being an old wrestling fan, gives me at least the closest taste of that, and so it's hard not to try to support them.
Now, the ROH iPay-Per-View coming up this weekend. We are nearing the end of 2011. A couple of weeks back, we did a 2011 year-in-review show. And looking forward to 2012, Mike, worldwide here. Let's do a quick five-minute look and get your thoughts on how the world is going to turn in 2012, or end, as some people believe. Let's start with America, WWE, TNA, just pro wrestling for now. How do you see the outlook for 2012? Much the same, some good, some bad, some ugly, some turnarounds. How do you think it's going to go?
Some good, some bad, some ugly, but again, WWE's been in the same thing every single year where they have the good build to WrestleMania. You get a little bit excited about it, you get some buzz coming out of it, you get a good feeling coming out of it, and then they go into the malaise, and it's every year's been the same thing, and until that cycle breaks, they'll come up with something hot in summertime, right as you're ready to give up faith altogether, like they've done the last couple of years with CM Punk or with Nexus or with some of the other stuff that they've done in the past, and you can at least count on them for that. You can count on for everything going in and around WrestleMania to be something else, but there's nothing, there's no feelings, there's no guides, there's no hints to anything other than next year being pretty much a standing pat situation for both companies. As long as TNA is able to float with the same rating, with the same thing of what they've been bringing in, you can't foresee a change happening. There's no one, you know, on the horizon that may jump in and do anything. It's going to be, it looks to be the same thing we've had in the last couple of years will be the same thing we're going to have here for the near future.
I think that for 2012 and 2013, 60% of the year is going to be miserable. I think that the WrestleMania season, January through April, the beginning of April, I think it's going to be great for WWE, and they're going to have a strong financial 2012 strictly because of WrestleMania. Now, 2013, 60% of the year is going to suck or be lame, and the road to WrestleMania is going to be awesome again because I strongly believe that WrestleMania 2013 will take place in Dallas, Texas, and be headlined by a match featuring the final match in the career of Stone Cold Steve Austin. So 2013 is going to be a huge year as well. After that, roll the dice. The big question mark is the WWE Network. If this network is a disaster, if it is a complete flop, that's bad news because they are spending a lot of money on this network. And I don't want to say they can't afford for it to be a failure, but a failure would be bad times. Bad times. So could be a situation like similar, I guess. Similar. Not the same as I think it was 2001, the year of the XFL, where WWE would have absolutely, completely destroyed every business record in history based on the wrestling operations, but the XFL sucked out so much money that they ended up having a bad year financially. And it could be that way for 2012 and 2013. You know, Rock's WrestleMania is going to be a gigantic financial period. And same with Steve Austin returning in 2013 for one match. But that network could suck so much money out of the company that both years could be money losers, which would just be astonishing. I mean, absolutely astonishing. Maybe. Maybe it wouldn't be astonishing. But anyway, that's my prediction for WWE and TNA. The booking's better, but it's still TNA. I think that it's going to be the exact same old for the next 2 years. They will continue running on Spike TV. They'll continue doing a 1-1-1-2 rating and about 1.5 million viewers. They will have good shows and bad shows, and largely nothing is going to change. That's my prediction for TNA. So, Mike, your predictions for UFC and Strikeforce?
You know, Strikeforce, it's good. As long as they have the women, and again, it's not like anyone's going to be beating down the doors. I don't think anyone should really care too much about what Strikeforce numbers on Showtime are going to be. It's going to be a down year for boxing, too, in all likelihood. And not in all likelihood, it will be a down year for boxing again next year, just because there's not enough fights and fighters out there that people really want to see or they're going to gravitate to. So, you know, Showtime and Strikeforce, I wouldn't look too much into their numbers. Again, I'm looking at it as it's going to be nice to see women's fighters. It's going to be nice to see guys like, you know, Oben St. Preux, some of those guys like that, you know, random, you know, Strikeforce guys. And I'm completely fine with that. It's going to go, you know, on and just be a show and probably will be forgotten about most weeks. And Bellator will probably, you know, have more shine on it most weeks. But Strikeforce is going to be Strikeforce and it's going to go along and that's fine. UFC, I think they, again, it's not going to be the second show coming up that's going to be key. I think it's really going to be the third show. You know, it's, if that second show, again, if it all goes wrong and all the quote-unquote wrong guys wins, you know, Munoz wins and Maya wins and Phil Davis wins, it's going to be interesting. I think that show is the bellwether, I think, for the rest of the year. There's going to be injuries. There's going to be problems. There's going to be, you know, all sorts of issues that plague them. But I think with the money rolling in, the expansion on fuel and fuel getting on more carriers throughout the year and everything that goes along with the business aspect, I think it's going to be, again, it's going to be another really good year for them. Now, how they take a hit creatively with, you know, having pay-per-views that people want to spend money on, that's what, you know, they're going to get most hit with, and that's what they have to be most careful about because they are going to be trying to figure out ways to really string together 12 times for people to lose, you know, separate themselves from $50.
I think that it's going to be a solid year for UFC. I don't think it's going to be a fantastic year. They have a lot of things they got to deal with. You know, fuel isn't in a lot of homes right now. And doing a lot of preview shows and even live events on fuel. I mean, some of those, many of those are essentially going to take place in a vacuum at this point. And you know, the issues of giving good matches to Fox while holding off good matches for pay-per-view. I mean, the way the TV contract is structured, yes, $90 million a year for UFC is much better money than they were getting from Spike. With that said, you're looking at that being like a quarter of their annual revenue a couple of years back based on pay-per-view buys. So they've got to keep pay-per-view buys strong, and pay-per-view buys this year were not strong. And a lot of that was due to injuries. And for those of you that think that it was just a bad year for injuries and that next year there's not going to be any injuries or injuries to the level of this year, I would think they're going to be the I think the number of injuries we had this year is going to become the average. Maybe you'll get slightly fewer big injuries. You could get more. It's impossible to say, but it's a new era now in terms of injuries, and all of these injuries and all of these shows make it much, much harder to book, and all these shows make it much, much harder to create stars. You can still create stars, don't get me wrong, but it's a lot easier to create stars when you have fewer shows that more people are watching. When you start having a large number of shows and fewer people are watching each show, you can still create stars, but it's going to take a longer period of time. John Jones, for example, you know, it's John, any of these stars, you know, if an average of 300,000 people are buying your pay-per-views, then you've got significantly fewer people seeing each person than if you've got an average of 600,000 people buying your pay-per-views. When you have double the people buying your pay-per-views, it takes half as much time to create a star. So these are issues that UFC is going to have to deal with in 2012. They are not making mistakes like WWE and TNA and the pro wrestling companies have been making. So I don't see them having a disaster of a year. It's just going to be about balance. And there are a lot of smart people in UFC, a lot of people trying to figure out how to make this thing work. This is not a situation where every day at a creative meeting, it's trying to decide why a certain person can't get over. I don't see it being a disastrous year or anything like that. I don't necessarily see it being a breakthrough year, but I could be wrong. We shall see how things go with the Fox deal. It could be huge. And it could not be huge. It's very tough to say. We're running out of time here in this segment. I was going to ask Mike about Japan, but looks like we're not going to have time. So maybe we'll get a couple of thoughts on that when we come back from the break. Don't forget, immediately after the show goes off the air, we got one final segment, then we're off the air. WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer, live running play-by-play of the TLC pay-per-view. So make sure you head over there and check that out. We'll be back in just a moment for the final segment, Wrestling Observer Live, here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the final segment on the show. Sports Byline Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 208. I'm sorry, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Channel 208. Before we go here, Mike Sempervivi, your thoughts on Japan in 2012. Kind of had a resurgence here in 2011 in some ways.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, Dragon Gate obviously is the most financially solvent company over there. And as Dragon Gate USA seemed to take a pretty big dip, it seemed like this year as far as, attention on the product and fervor from their internet-based fan base, which is pretty much what it is. With that little bit of a decline, I think it hurt Mochizuki a little bit as far as these end-of-year votings will go. But realistically, in Japan, they're rolling along still very, very well. It's still going to be the Hiroshi Tanahashi show, and it's still going to be the New Japan show. Even though Dragon Gate's got the money, New Japan is still the one with the prestige, and it's still the alpha wrestling company over there, and Hiroshi Tanahashi is the face of that. Cleaned up in the Tokyo Sports Awards this year, legitimately deserves to win the Wrestling Observer Newsletter, the 2011 Wrestler of the Year, when those awards come out. He's really that good, and he's going to continue to take that company, which is the best booked right now, and really one of the most well-run. They're going to keep chugging along, and again, it's not like it was 10 years ago, but that's okay. It doesn't have to be. They're recultivating fans again, and that's really the most important thing. And the fact is they've also brought stars along, and they've created them in a way where they've continued to get good, and they're starting to come up with a cycle now of these guys being more comfortable with who they are. And again, it's going to be probably another great year for New Japan next year.
All right, everybody, we are going to wrap it up for today. Don't forget, moments after the show goes off the air. In fact, right now, head to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave Meltzer doing live running play-by-play of the TLC pay-per-view. Dave and I back later on tonight exclusively for subscribers at WrestlingObserver.com, talking the show as well, so check it out. Thanks, as always, Mike. Thanks, everybody, for listening. All the folks at Sports Byline USA. We'll talk to you again very soon. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.